Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Joining us in the studio this morning are some of the members of Kibbutz Neir Am. And in fact, I could ask you, first of all, welcome. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you so much.
And if you could just introduce yourselves, that would make my life and our listeners' lives easier.
So we're very happy to be here. My name is Oriana, and I have my friends Chen and Dana here with me. We're on a delegation from Kibbutz Neir Am to get to know the Jewish communities in South Africa. And it's very exciting for us. We're also very much thankful for all your support during these months of war and also the time that we were evacuated in the hotel in Tel Aviv.
Right.
So we had volunteers coming and helping us with the children and with the moving back to the kibbutz.
Amazing. That is amazing.
Really.
And, give me a sense of, and maybe, you know, whoever wants to answer any of the questions can, tell us for some of our listeners who don't know the specific kibbutz, exactly where it is and what it was like there prior to October the 7th.
So Neir Am is very close to the Gaza border. It's about 1 kilometer. It's between Sderot and Gaza.
Okay.
So we are really close to the border. On October 7th, we had a lot of Ashgacha because there were some troops of the IDF between us
Ashgacha
and the Gadel.
Is luck, fortune,
I really can't explain it any other way because we're so close to the Gader, you know,
absolutely,
the fence.
Yes.
And we had also our civilian fighters that had some more time than other places because of the troops that were fighting a great battle in the fields of Neir Am.
Right. So they could get to the armory? They could get...
Exactly.
Okay, because when I visited the region, that was the one thing that shocked me was how ill-equipped the residents were because their weapons were taken away from them. I mean, they didn't have anything. And you had trained people fighting with butter knives. It was an absurdity.
Yeah, you're right. A couple of years before the 7th of October, the civilian units asked us if we want to carry weapon. And we didn't thought that it's necessary because we thought everything would be fine. Mm-hmm. And the only threat that we have is a rocket threat. Mm-hmm. We didn't even thought about that something like that could happen. So I told to my husband that we don't need a weapon in the house because you think it's more dangerous that my kids will mess with it than the terrorists will come. So
So this was the situation, but near...
But now every one of us is carrying weapon.
I have no doubt.
But the armory was very poor.
Wasn't good anyway.
It wasn't good. It wasn't invested in any way. The guns were taken away from there. It wasn't considered to be something important and something that we need.
Right. So the day dawns and the sirens are going off. Some of the troops are there. What happens?
It's next? Very, for us, at the 6:29, exactly the time that the siren was started, we all of us was in the shelter. I built my house half as a shelter, so it will be more comfortable for us, you know, to live in this kind of situation that the alarm is ongoing all the time. So we just hide in the shelter. We didn't know what's really going on outside. It was really... suddenly it started to feel very awkward because the siren didn't stop. Usually we're just taking a luggage, we pack immediately and we leave the place. But in that day we understand that something is so weird happening, so we start to see what's going on in the WhatsApp. And after 10 minutes we don't have electricity, we don't have nothing. Actually, the situation that we don't have electricity really saved us because the main gate of the kibbutz was closed and the terrorists couldn't come in and get inside of the kibbutz. Even their trucks the white trucks, they just saw the gate of the kibbutz is closing and there is any possible that someone will open it. So they turn around and go to Sderot from our main gate, but they also come from the front, from the back gate of the kibbutz. There we have so much luck because the unit of Golani that was there at that time really saved us, because it took a while when they come to the gate of the kibbutz and all our civilian unit was on the roof and ready if something will happen. Ariana, did you want to tell about Matan? And
We have two soldiers, one Golani soldier named Matan Abarjil. He is a brave young soldier that jumped on a grenade inside his tank, saving his eight friends. The last thing he said when he was dying in the arms of his comrade was, "I wanted to save you. I wanted to save Israel." And we are very thankful and obliged to him and to his family for giving up his life and saving us that day. Another brave police officer from Magav Tactic Unit, like Special Forces, is Roman Gandel, who also gave his life in the Battle of Nir Am. It was a battle of about 18 hours. All that time we were in the shelters, hearing the gunshots, hearing the terrorists, starting to get on our phone some news like...
starting to understand the magnitude.
Like massacre in Ofakim, massacre in Sderot. Right. People are dying, like pictures of dead bodies, pictures of Sderot police station, which is like 3-minute drive from the kibbutz, being occupied by Hamas terrorists. Right. So it was terrifying.
So the day turns into an 18-hour battle. During this time, you're obviously understanding how serious this is. Do the terrorists breach the gate at all? Do they get into the kibbutz?
They were in the agricultural area, in our orchards, in what we have like a factory of the kibbutz, where one of our workers was kidnapped to Gaza, and some other workers were butchered in that orchard. But it was 99, like just the last minute when the Magav, the police forces, arrived, because our civilian fighters were all talking to each other on the radio. They were saying like, "Oh my God, we see these trucks full of Hamas, fully weaponized, going in the direction of the kibbutz, just like less than 100 meters from our kibbutz." And they were like gathering on the hill, what we call the Madgera. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, "Oh my God, like in 2-3 minutes, they're gonna go. And there's only 6 of us with not a lot of weapons." They say like, "Okay, we'll give everything we've got, but they will probably enter the kibbutz." And in the very last minute, the police came and they had that battle, the battle where Roman Gandel died, and they managed to like escape them off, to run them off.
And this is after how many hours? 18?
It was in brutal, like 18, general 18. Right. This was, I think, at about 3 p.m., something like that. Started at about 7 in the morning, where Golani troops were.
And what's going through all of your minds during this time? You, in a way, the stories that we hear from some of the other kibbutzim, where they're active in whatever's happening immediately, and this is all playing out. There's no time to think. In a way, Nir Am residents are almost mentally tortured for a longer period.
In all that time, me and my, I have 4 children. We were in the safe room without electricity, and we just hear the sound of gunshots, and we smell the fire everywhere. And me and my husband thought it's going to be, this is the last day of our life. And we tell our children, "Be quiet, be quiet," because there is a terrorist, we thought.
Just how old are your children?
10, the oldest one is 10, 8, 6, and 4.
Okay.
Now, they were younger.
Yeah.
So my husband decided that he's going out from the safe room, and he took an axe and sit next to the front door, waiting for the terrorist to take him to Gaza, and he will tell him that he is alone and I could escape with the children. So we sat around.
So you knew at this point that they were taking hostages?
We heard.
You heard through the WhatsApps, through everything.
Yes, a lot of our friends was killed. In that time, we started to get the push in the news. That
so you start to understand what's going on. Okay.
So we just sat and wait for the terrorists to come in. And he said that is the worst day of his life. You know, he said, "This is my last day." You know, I also thought that. I think everyone in Iran.
I want to speak or add as a mother, because in that time, my mother tried to call me all the time. She was so much worried.
Where is she living? Where is she?
In the center of Israel.
Okay, so she's nowhere near, but
no.
She knows.
Yeah, we all are not originally from the area. Mm-hmm. I just married to a person who lives in the area, my husband.
Right.
And I also have 4 kids. in about the same age that Chen has, but I also have a baby in that time. And you can control the yelling of your baby.
Of course.
And like you hiding your socks in your pocket when the terrorists will come in, because we thought they are in the door. So we can put the socks inside their mouth to that we, she will
be
quiet.
This is like the story of Egypt. This is like the story of Egypt when the Egyptians and Pharaoh goes into the houses to try and find the baby boys, and they try to stop them from crying. I mean, this is biblical. You go living through a moment of biblical proportion. It's insane.
You're right. So what I want to say is that my mother tried to call me all the time,
right,
and I didn't want to answer the phone, course, because I was scared, you know, like to change. When I answer to my mother phone call, it's like putting me as a child, you know
of
what
course,
I mean?
Of
and
course.
Then I would start to cry.
Can't keep it together.
So no. It was so difficult for me. So I didn't answer the phone all the time because I knew when I will answer, I will start to cry. I will be the baby, you know, of my mother. And now I need to be strong. I need to be powerful for my kids. So as a mother, it's so much difficult because evolution. In the evolution, you know, our husband immediately wants to go to the armory to take a weapon and to start fighting, you know. It's like, and we are the mother wants, you know, to keep all the kids,
keep the kids
together. And it was very ambivalent, you know, the situation inside the house, because he said, I'm going to the army. And I said, no, we need to keep. It was a very difficult moment for us.
How do you move forward? Now you obviously at the end of this time you leave the kibbutz because no one is, you know, once you are safe, you move to a hotel, I think you mentioned in Tel Aviv.
We were in Erod's Hotel in Tel Aviv for 10 months. Imagine, you know, a family with four children live in one room 10 months. It was hard. And we returned to the kibbutz in August. It was hard because it's a war area. We hear all the bombs, our house is shaking, we have cracks on the walls, you know, and it's hard. In the kibbutz, usually before October 7, kids is always outside with a bike and walking, and now they can't be alone. I also put bars on my windows and I put more locks, and every night I wake up and I check if my house is closed. This has never happened to me before October 7th.
Well, it's not something that you used to in Israel. Here we live with bars on our windows, but it's a very different. And of course, you go back to a place where you've lost friends and you've lost community. It's shattered. How do you deal with that? How do your children deal? How do you deal with your children having lost friends?
It's very hard because Shaar HaNegev is a very small community. We all go to school together. We all work together. So everybody knows so many people that were slaughtered, like whole families, and people that you used to work with are kidnapped or murdered or in a very bad shape mentally. And it's very hard. We are all very much traumatized. Like, it's really, it's not something that goes by after a week or a month or a year. Also, you know, when we escaped the kibbutz, you know, we only realized the horror because, you know, the streets were like a horror movie. And
right, after because that until then you contained, you're in your house. And it's only when you come out you see the devastation.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And after that, we tried to reach our friends that not answering the phone, you know, like a week after we searched for our friends that was cycling outside and they didn't answer the phone. We tried to reach them. And after a week, we understand that they dead, they was murdered. It was so sad situation.
Also,
the tears are coming, you know, so easily
no,
for us.
No, of course. It comes for us and our listeners, I can tell you, and we didn't live this experience. We live it as much as we can with you. And I think you'll see that from the South African community is... I've seen many communities. I'm not sure that there's a community that feels the pain of what you endured as much as the South African community does. There's something here very
connected.
Very connected.
We feel it.
I can't explain it, but it's just, it is.
It's amazing for us to see. Like, people here are so aware of what's going on in Israel.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see that.
It's like everything you know by the minute, you know.
Very, very much.
So much involved, and like everybody care. You really feel how much you care for what's going on in Israel. Yeah. and in the Otef, yeah.
And how much love we are getting everywhere that we are going here. So it's so much, you know, important for us, you know, even to our strength. To
is
feel
this healing? Does it? Yeah. Yeah.
I want to say thank you. It's the time, I think, to say thank you to the all South, to all the community in South Africa that help us rebuild our kibbutz. And they help us to rebuild our children's house that was in the army military base. And they were in our kibbutz when we were in the hotel.
Right.
And now after we came back, they're helping us and they are painting our houses. And even now, when we are here, we are meeting lovely people. And we really want to say thank you to all of you that helping us, you know, rebuild our kibbutz.
The group that is here, tell me about a bit more about the group. How many of you
well,
have?
Well, it's only four of us.
There are four of you, right?
Yeah. So it's like a delegation to meet and to think together about new projects that we want to do together. So we're also looking forward to think what can
focusing
we do together.
Focusing on the future. Mm.
Yeah, and just like have some connection, maybe through the youth, maybe through different variant projects that we can do together to maintain this connection, because it opened up a new world for us, you know, to come here.
Have any of you ever been to South Africa before?
No.
I have an uncle here.
You've got an uncle here. It's just interesting because we are seeing this. We're seeing people coming here that have never had a connection. And of course, the South African government, we know, is very, very unsupportive of Israel, and very, very critical of Israel. But the contrast between government and people, and it's not only Jewish, it's people, the South Africans, Jewish, not Jewish, are very sympathetic and very, very supportive. So I do hope that there is some healing. How are your children all doing?
It's hard because when we got here, a day after we got here, also another operation started in Gaza. So even
yesterday, too, Qassam rocket was launched from Gaza to our kibbutz. So it's very hard for us to be here, and you know, like your children is going through.
Are they? I mean, obviously everybody reacts differently, but I mean, are they triggered when this starts to happen again, or has it become?
Yeah, we feel it
normal?
Immediately. You know, we hear everything. We're so close. Like we hear every shot, every boom. So it's like, oh, no, it's starting again. You know, having after the agreement, we had like a month of quiet.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like before that, we had so many months of just war noises. And this week has really been hard for us as mothers to be away from the kids. You know, every Tzeva Adom, every alarm. Also, we had 2 days ago, like they send a text, everybody go in the houses, lock your doors. Go in the houses, lock your doors. We didn't know what's going on.
Yesterday, when we go out on the safari, we suddenly get a message, emergency message like that. Lock the door and don't go out. Mm. It was so scary. It's, you know, it takes you back for the days of the 7th of October. And it's some guy that was landed with a kind of a kite, you know, a big kite that the terrorists will come with on the 7th of October. It was very scared for us.
Every alarm is like being back in October 7th, you know?
And you know that you're going to sleep with your kids that night because they can't, you know, sleep alone. We just want to say something about the connection between the communities because the Israeli Center, the Sechnut HaYehudit, is match each kibbutz with a community in all over the world. And Nir'am got South Africa, thanks God.
Yes.
So we got you. And we're so happy to have it here. And we came here just to connect it, you know, between each other. And it's amazing. And we also want to say a few things about the hostages. That it's very important for us that we are all willing that the hostages will come back soon. Okay. The story of us can't be ended unless all of them will come back. Please help me, Oriana. I'm starting to cry.
No, it's just you have to understand nothing is over. You know, it's been more than a year and a half, but it's not over. We're still in this trauma. We're still in this horrible story. You know, for us living so close to where hostages are being underground, starved, beaten. You know, it's just unbelievable. And we think about it all the time. We dream about it at night. We have to have them back home. Without it, we can't heal.
And it's it's also a closure that we need for our kids, because while our kids living in the place that hostages would kidnap, and the country is not returning them back. So they knew that if something like that will happen to them again, nobody will be care of them. So we needed for our kids to be more strong and no more and more believe in the IDF and this and the and Israel in the country of Israel. It's more important for us as a mother to our kids and what message we want to give them for the next
generation. And that's where we leave it. Thank you. And welcome to South Africa. Thank you for sharing your story with us. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM.